has been pointed out to me by friends and those who have come to lots of gigs that I've got more songs to end an evening than to start one. So actually a few years ago I actually woke up with the last line of this song in my head. I was thinking of that sort of in that sort of daydreamy state just before you kind of surface into the day of when I was very much younger and hitchhiking around Europe with my guitar, believing I was following in the footsteps of people like Woody Guthrie and Jack Kerouac and people like that, and full of optimism, not really knowing where I was going, but being sure it was the right thing to do. And I started this last line and worked backwards until I had a song called Walk Into the Morning. Destination, sense of vague direction south, a bedroll on my shoulder, a guitar for company, some Woody Guthrie songs and the road in front of me. I didn't need to hear a freight train to know a sunny terrace hall. Was I making cry for freedom, whistling in my door? A simple buffet, reason can't erode. I grab my coat, my guitar, and I headed for the road. Stars like some deserted lover with my arm around my guitar. Promises get broken, reason searches right on God. Conscience held to ransom, hostage to the golden time. Now below the lies of heaven that a frightened world must see, dear son, in between things you taught and what you learned me, the evening sky is fading to the color of my jeans. I'm writing with my finger in the dust that falls from dreams. Beyond the halo moon, I glimpsed infinity. I shivered at the joke until the rain soaked into me and woke me at the roadside as the day was dawning. I grabbed my coat and my guitar and I walked into the course that I've been traveling ever since and loving it all of it. was such an authentic sounding musician. I just, everything he sang and played was so credible to me. He was a companion to Woody Guthrie when Woody was traveling across America and when he was beginning to get known, and he could do a very passable imitation of Woody. And in fact, he sounded, when I actually got to hear Woody for the first time, I was just a little bit disappointed because I thought Jack sounded better. And Jack was actually the son of a New York doctor, had nothing to do with Oklahoma and the, you know, and getting to California and the Dust Bowl and all that, but he sounded so authentic. And in the late 50s, he came to England on sort of tail end of the skiffle thing with a guy called Daryl Adams, who was a banjo player, and they made an album called The Rambling Boys. And probably four or nine Scottish lads, Welsh lads, Irish lads, or whatever, made the trip over to France and started busking on the streets and trying to live a kind of European version of those travels and glamours across America. And I was part of that. And I wandered all around Europe for a couple of years, not a couple of years solidly on the road, but a couple of times I went away during a couple of years and travelled around and played the guitar. And I set up in Paris in 1965, and I was working on some streets in the Latin Quarter and around the cinema queues, because it's one of the few things that the French will form a queue for, is a cinema. And it meant that, you know, they were static and they couldn't escape. Unlike young musicians who play in the tube, you can just walk past, but if you're queuing for something, then you know you have a good chance of a captive audience. So we were playing in Paris for quite a while, and then suddenly this friend of mine said to me, "We should go to Brussels for a bit." And I thought, well, that would be nice. And what I didn't know that he had a girlfriend there. And that's what he was saying. And I didn't see much of him. I was just dumped in this cafe called the Welcome Bar. And in a little conversation, I heard the name Daryl Adams mentioned. He moved to Brussels. And this is my opportunity to see the great man. He was, by his own admission, he was a little lost at this time in drink. But nevertheless, we had a, for me, most memorable evening and following day with him. And we later met and became very close friends. And I have to say that he had absolutely no recollection of this meeting whatsoever. And he believed me. So I wrote this song when he passed away for an album dedication to those that love the man, and this is it. It's called A Feather Fell. His song that he could remember was a song called Little Birdie, which we went out and played, and his most famous song is a song called Portland Town that John Byrne has recorded. friends from this town. I was trying too hard to impress. I had to learn to play soft. I must have been okay, I guess. Little birdie, that is what we sang. And I was 21 with a big guitar. Flown a nest and left a door ajar. Picking out jeans in a Belgian bar with a tattooed banjo man. Legendary baron called Diamond Joe. Pentuan, there was once upon a time a little narrow gauge railway. And the remains of the tracks you can still see down at the port because it was quite a busy port when the sailing ships used to come and collect the white China clay from the clay mines up in the hills and take it off around the world. And as a result, the spillage from the clay kind of stained the river kind of milky white. And I can remember that. It's been cleaned up now, but it was only clay, it's kind of organic and everything. And when it met the sea, it kind of changed the colour of the sea into a very exotic sort of Jamaican, West Indian blue colour, beautiful, a turquoise colour. And this little train used to chug down to Pentuan regularly with its load of clay and into the mountain to the ships off around the world. And then, during the First World War, some bright spark had the idea of getting the troops up to the front line a bit quicker. Why not build narrow gauge railways? And I've been on YouTube and I can actually see them do it. I was looking to see if I could recognize one of the engines because Canopus, I thought that was the name of the little engine, was commandeered by the army and the tracks ripped up and taken out to Flanders to get the lads up to the front. And the more I thought about it, the more sinister it became, this little puffing steam engine, peacefully marking the day by his excursions, being turned into an instrument of war, you know. And so if this sounds sinister, it's a poster. some distant place with those who have no names. All we started as a fish, not many minutes it is, it's in my mind. Thank you. was reminded that you should know the man who designed it or built it was Sir Christopher Wren, no less. And yeah, it's here for Chris. I think if I'm asked about what my I'm not a religious man, but if I'm asked what my favourite building is, it has to be St. Paul's, when I think of what it has come to symbolise as much as what it was built for. And I've included the name of the great man in this song because it was the village, which is very near where Ventura is a village called London Apprentice, where I've stayed at the time. And I thought it was an appropriate name for all Londoners, because although Londoners are lumped together by people who don't live in London, we're all different. We're just villages connected by the tube. And we don't know what goes on in the next village, and most of us don't even know what goes on three houses down the road, whereas the villages seem to know everything about everybody. And it is a bit daunting, but Londoners are kind of got used to it, and we, you know, the hugeness of it, and we sort of take it for granted. So we're all apprentices. We're all apprentices to London. We know what's happening. I should sing this to Alan Sugar, shouldn't I? Yes. So we don't know it. We don't know it all. So we're all learning all the time. You can't know a place like London. As soon as you think you do, it changes. So this is a song that I wrote one day when I was moving on the guitar. Put the two things together. I am the London apprentice, for I never will learn a trade. The best that I could hope for is from mistakes I made. And a man who never made it, he never made nothing at all. Sir Christopher Wren had to start again when he built St. Paul's. I am the London apprentice, I never will learn the ways. When I walk the streets of London, I'm constantly amazed. How a road I never was on before leads to what I know. And as any cabbie will tell you, that's how the knowledge grows. I am the London apprentice, I love the muddy Thames. Pushing its way through the city, oh, just to come back again. Through plague and conflagration, and when the bombers came, the symbol for a nation was St. Paul amongst the I accept the status quo. The light of me must be born in the valley bells of Paul's Harlem. I am determined to print it. I accept the status quo. A copy must be born within the silent bells of Paul. But London's been a refuge by accidental plan. So you ask me, who's a Londoner? Nothing you ever. me because I just used to borrow friends' records and try to figure out what was going on. I don't read music, so the discoveries that I made as a kid when I first picked up the instrument are still there. I still make, have what I call these fortunate or happy accidents when I'm playing the guitar and I find a chord. I think, oh, that, I must remember that, put it in somewhere. So I know what key I'm in usually, but if you ask me what chord it would be, I might have struggled a little bit, especially if it's got any of those anxiety chords that diminish to flat in the sevens and stuff like that. I have no idea what they are, but if it sounds right, I usually throw them into the tune. So most of my guitar players were men that actually from the 20s and 30s that really would have preferred to be playing a piano, but of course the portability of the piano and the reliability of when you get there, one that actually plays in the tune. So they developed a pianistic kind of guitar style, which I've always loved and still intrigues me. And my favourite teachers probably, or my favourite musicians would be Blind Arthur Phelps and Blind Reverend Davis, Reverend Gary Davis, who I was lucky enough to meet in the early 70s. And most of it was from ragtime and blues playing that the style I tried to play evolved. But when I was in Paris in 1965, I met a young American who was dodging the Vietnam draft, and there was lots of them actually. But it made for a very rich kind of scene, and he was a wonderful guitar player. He'd had lessons from Reverend Davis, and he was an extraordinary guitar player. And he introduced me to the work of a man called Joseph Spence, who was from the Bahama Islands, miles away. Never heard American guitar players. But again, it evolved a style of playing, which I've always loved. And one of the great privileges of being a musician is that you can make little songs of dedication to those who have enlightened you or enriched your life. And this is a song I wrote based on some music by Joseph Spence, who was a carpenter by trade, and a stonemason, also an official, and an extraordinary guitar player. So this is called The Hands of Joseph, dedicated to all 10 fingers which he managed to hang on to in spite of his trades.
Now when they looked at Joseph's hands, they said,
The musician now makes some talking tunes. Oh, he's happy all the time, 'cause they're working every day. No, there's a Joseph, oh, how you can pay him. He will sing about joy, sing about things that the people wish they had. And we heard the voice of Jesus on the road and sing our man. He's a bird in the harbor, and he's safe in my love. He knows someday he'll be singing above. Seems a few years ago that I was putting this thing down and trying to say how independent, how sunny she was. And I wrote this song. It was on an album that came out. I was probably about 30 when I wrote this one. And it might work out if I don't break down. It's called "You Make Me Feel Good." Thank you. So in order to write this song, I decided first of all to write a story. So I wrote a very long, rambling story, like a short story, like an essay or something. And when I finished it, I then reported it as if it had actually happened, and it was a newspaper report about an incident. And then I took this kind of pricey work and I turned it into verses, and then I made them rhyme. And then I added a tune. And it's called Peppers and Tomatoes. And it's about how two different groups of people living in the same place for generations really can have that old evil hatred stirred up and divide them into groups and stuff. And the idea, to be perfectly truthful, did come to me from, of all things, from Grow Bag, where it's suitable for peppers and tomatoes. I mean, it does sound comic, and it does sound like a song that should really be on Gardener's World or something. It's actually, in a better way of explaining it, two different things with their roots in the same bit of soil that sustains them both side by side. And then, things change. All men like to grow stuff, and food stuff. So sometimes with what's happening in the Philippines right now is a bit reminiscent. This is Peppers and Tomatoes. arrive to the table, we will share what we've grown, like my father did before me, and his father did before him, and his father did before him. We will read a new song. From this little pile of stones, and I can wash the dirt from off my face and skin, but this earth is in my bones. Military vehicles are moving through our village, moving through our village with young soldiers ill at ease, unsmiling and unshaven. Distrustful and uncertain, and all smoking constantly. And my neighbors say, don't worry, you are one of us, you are one of us, and it will not happen here. But the next night at the cafe, when I bring wine to the table, when I bring wine to the table, they are sitting drinking. Last night the hand of friendship fell heavy on my shoulder, heavy on my shoulder, as I turned away to go. As I said goodnight, some old men and young soldiers were humming tunes and singing words to songs I did not know. Oh, there's a little patch of dirt. Oh, there's a little patch. On my face, on my skin, but this earth is in my bones. This morning my wife told me that she'd been to church on Sunday. She'd been to church on Sunday. She had felt the need to pray. Our children were baptized, and there was just the busy old ones. It was just to please the old ones, and I don't know what to say. Oh, there's a little patch of dirt. Oh, there's a little pile of stones. I can't wash the dust from off my face and skin, but it's everything. case of tuna, pleasure foot is some sort of like nodding dog kind of way. This is for those who were lucky enough to fall in love when they were young. Not just their usual teenage stuff, a funnel of themes, all fingers and tongues, reaching out and breathe. Touch like jam, bring me. This is for those who are really free, though not unusual. Feel the vision, each other's eyes are all they see. I've told this story before, so forgive me if you've heard it, but maybe you haven't heard this in Oxfordshire. Shropshire many moons ago doing an interview with a chap, and because most people only know one of myself, and I always know that it's going to come up. It's one of them certainties, one of those certainties that you know it will come up, and you know you have to go, oh, I've never been asked that before. But this was a double, because suddenly I could see the song was like going to be mentioned like a small cloud on the horizon, getting nearer and nearer. And then the DJ kept looking at me, and he said, "You're not Roger Whittaker at all, are you?" And I forgot he preceded that with, "Didn't you used to have a beard?" And I said, "No." He just said, "Are you sure?" It's the sort of thing you would notice, isn't it? If you could find your beard. I said, "Well, God." And then he said, so he obviously thought he was interviewing somebody completely different. So I gave him a quick whistling chorus and we moved on. I've still got a job. It's absolutely true.
To a city, the rain cries a little.
It's this extraordinary piece of work. But I myself have seen it several times, but I kind of always lose track of where it's going and what's going on because I never get past an early scene in the film. And I thought the only way to, you know, move on really and get the best out of the film is maybe to write a song and then the song just took over and I don't care if I never see the film again. I shall watch it all the way through. It's a scene where a character, a businessman called Bernstein, is talking about catching a ferry boat out of New York to Jersey. And as he's getting on, a boat comes in and there's a girl on it, a beautiful girl. And he instantly, the implication is that he instantly knows that that is the woman that he should be with for the rest of his life. But she gets off the boat, and his boat goes out. And this song is composed out of that incident. And it's called The Girl on the Jersey Ferry.
I've had a life as I've done my sins that I never thought.
and gone, and I still remember the girl with the white dress on. A fleeting glimpse, jazz is missed, destiny fades from twist. She doesn't even know that I exist. How about that? And the years are tall. Did I mention she carried a white parasol? Funny the things a fella will remember sometimes. His arms were sort of outstretched and he was looking up at the sky, thinking those big thoughts, I suppose. And I don't know where the poem comes from, something that probably told me at the end of the evening, but I always remember something about the noble savage, the kind of spirituality of people, the need for it, or the way they express it in whatever. And I wrote this song. And then years later, I did see a documentary about South American Indians living in the jungle, and I thought, so it was only sort of a previous fib that came true. So this is a song called First and Last Man. This is from Dave's friends and me. I'm afraid, without a prompt from the ether, I will not be able to mention the names, and probably won't pronounce it properly. But this is for you, you know who you are. Danish couple who have three sons.
There is beauty in pain and no sadness.
I am the willing heathen, for I worship everything, and I will add your words to my language. I'll write them on the wheel. Oh, la, 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 la. And I am the maker of music and the reader of the heavens, and I am the worker of magic and the feeler of storms. La, 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 la. I am just a writer in the sand. I am the first and last man, and if I could read the future, I would ask you not to come. I would ask you not. Take this seat near the door. I'm not hungry much, now I'm here. Is it okay if I share yours with you? I have no money and nothing. I believe that you remember the moon on the wall, picture shine. Taste of the sheets and the feel of the land. One, I'm glad that you were mine in the ground of hell. I take a boat there, maybe a plane. Go anywhere it's a brief soul spin. Sure, I know where I am. I seem canals. This is Amsterdam. I got friends here and they know, and they can say who I am. Remember the wrong without any fear. Pride and beauty and some. I could speak French, but I'd rather not talk. And which suit will I wear tonight? I take out the brown, but in the end wear the white. At the shades that they have and move into the light. Remember the moon on the wall. He was all wrong, so he sent back. fact, probably the greatest contemporary songwriter that I know. I had the great privilege of working with him in 1971 in Philadelphia, and I remember him famously saying to me about encores, you know, as a grown man walking on stage, hiding in the dark, and then coming back. But he did it at the Royal Festival the other night. Listen, thanks so much. What a wonderful place this is to play. I just hope that you all come back again. Yeah. I just did this one, and we've got some stuff over here. I'll come out and sign records and things, and hopefully they'll be mine, but I'm not proud. I'll sign them. Give me a few minutes, and I'll come back out and sit there. 1963 was a momentous year for me in many ways. It was a cold winter, and I was down living near Bournemouth in a freezing cold place. The adventures are written in my book, and that's another story. But in that same year, Bob Dylan brought out his second album on Sleep Bob. His Bob lives on the Friday before. I had quite a weekend of heroes, actually. And he was wonderful. I saw him at the Royal Albert Hall, which is an unplanned there anyway as well, which is going to be some. In 1963, February it was, I think, the album came out called Freewheeling, and on it was a picture of Bob, young Bob, strolling down the street, kind of hands in pockets, and with a beautiful girl on his arm. Or her arms were wrapped around him, actually. And even if you didn't want to play or sound like Bob, you would have loved to have had a girl like Susie Rotolo, as her name. Susie Rotolo, great girl. And this photograph was an icon. It was just full of hope. And, you know, it was just that period when everything was changing, the music and the words were singing. And somehow everything was captured in this picture of two young people, very much in love, strolling down a freezing cold street, West 4th Street, which I think it was, in New York. And it's almost as famous now for that picture as the Beatles. Abbey Road, people come to get their picture taken down there, strolling along with Bob and Susie. And I've always loved this picture, and eventually this song came out. It's called West 4th Street in Germany. His hands deep in his pockets, his hair was slightly bowed, all the started nonchalance had the right word aloud. Her arms ran around him like a shawl to keep him from the cold. Love someone could melt him, what once she had. Thank you. kissed my girl on Garden Street. How was I to know that we'd begun to drift apart as I stumbled through soap? In the unforgiving neon light, the words she could not speak were written in her mascara that dried. Steps leave their footprints on the park in the jingle.